We welcome you to another bicentennial convocation. As you know, during this month of January, here at St. Olaf, we have been stressing in our curriculum and in much of our extracurricular activities the culture and life of Native Americans. We've had an interim lecture series devoted to that topic and that concern, and also six of our courses during this interim have been concerned with Native Americans. So it is quite appropriate that for both these reasons, the bicentennial and our stress this interim, we welcome today Mr. Henry Greencrow, who is a Native American consultant to the St. Paul Public Schools. Mr. Greencrow is a Winnebago Indian. His major concerns as consultant to the schools in St. Paul are the problems of Native American students enrolled in the public school system. He's done a lot of work outside of this particular job in the area of human relations training for educators. Upon occasion, he has had the opportunity to lead training programs and head lecture series at the University of Minnesota, St. Cloud, Mankato, and Rochester. He also directed an Indian studies course for 12 weeks at Stillwater Prison and has spoken at a variety of other colleges, including lecturing in sociology classes previously here at St. Olaf. He is a former policeman from Bloomington. He also has trained officers in law enforcement for the state of Minnesota. In the past few years, Mr. Greencrow has spent a good deal of his extra time visiting college campuses to arouse an awareness and sensitivity to non-Indian. It's a pleasure to welcome to St. Olaf again today, Mr. Henry Greencrow.
I originally come here from the state of Wisconsin. At the turn of the century, the federal government had a policy where Native Americans were supposed to change their way of life, which included many, many, many changes. A little town called Tomah, Wisconsin, T-O-M-A-H-A-A-H. A federal boarding school and hospital was built. In that school, many Native American people were sent. Among some of those people that were sent there was my father. His first name was Peter Greencrow. He was born in 1918. At age six, he was sent there, and he told me of his experiences in that school. One of the first things he said they do is they cut your hair, that long hair, he said, they cut your hair. And he said they used to have to wear uniforms that they were issued out to them. And he said they get up early in the morning, about 5:30, before the sun comes up. And there was a bugler, he would blow reveille, you know, with his bugle. And he said they all get up, they wash their face, comb their hair, fix their beds, and they march out into the parade ground. There's a large parade ground, he said, and they go out there, he said. Then the bugler blows his bugle again, second time, and he said they raise a flag, the United States flag, red, white, and blue. And he said they stand out there and they salute. He said, salute the flag, and he blows his bugle. Then he said when they get through, then he said they march to a cafeteria and have breakfast, eat breakfast. And then when they get through with that, then they march to the classroom, and they sit in rows, you know. Teachers teach them the three R's. He said that was what he did. Age six, this would be about 1924. And he stayed in that place for 10 years, till 1934. 16 years old, he came out. And he said when they sit in these rows in school, he said if they ever talk Indian, teacher comes over with a ruler, wham, right across the knuckles. I told you not to talk Indian, what's the matter with you? Not supposed to do that. Talk English. So he said, that's kind of what they were taught, he said, as he grew up. And in later years, of course, eventually he met my mother, they got married. And ironically, I was born in that same institution, the Indian school, Indian hospital. And I've often thought back to those times. I myself, I haven't experienced that. I didn't go through that. I didn't have to go. I wasn't sent to a boarding school. But fortunately for me, in my case, I had a grandparents, grandmother, grandfather, around all the time. And I wasn't told that it was bad to be Indian or that I'm not supposed to talk Indian. I was never taught that in my home. In fact, the exact opposite. It's good. It's kind of nice. You should be proud. There's nothing wrong with being Indian. And during these years, as I grew older, my experiences have been that our way of life, the way it was attacked, you know, probably should have never been. We should have never had to experience that. Because today we see the ill effects that it has done to us. And my purpose in coming here today, I guess, is to tell you my perspectives, my insights into it, my experiences into what Indian culture has been and is and will continue to be. In spite of that process that I've just explained to you about my father, he came back after those 10 years. Incidentally, in this kind of a setting that I just told you about, the kids stayed there the year round. And including, you know, during the week, like when Friday came, they didn't go home for the weekend. There was no such thing. They stayed right there 7 days a week, 365 days a year, right there. They stayed a year round. None of this going home for Christmas and New Year's and Easter business. Stay right there. That was the policy. And when he came out, of course, you might say one of the good things you could say that school did for him is he did learn, you know, 2 and 2 is 4, 4 and 4 is 8, and he could speak English quite well. I guess you could say that was good for him. But in any event, when he came out, he knew that he didn't believe anyway that being Indian was bad or wrong, because he not only allowed but he encouraged me to learn those things. I'd wake up early in the morning. And the exact opposite, I guess you could say, what my father was going through. We have songs that we sing early in the morning. My grandmother says, her father, he goes outside and he faces the east. And the sun comes up early in the morning. They sing songs and they give thanks, 4 songs. And they give thanks that the sun come up one more time. They give thanks for this life today. That's what they do. It's the Indian religion, Indian way of life. Indian religion, Indian culture, synonymous. It wasn't something you did once in a while, or one day out of the week, or whenever you felt like it. It was all the time, every day. So when the father goes outside, he sings. There's one song I never forget. It goes like this. Humba kiri no hashtaje, humba kiri no hashtaje, humba kiri no hashtaje. Humba kiri no hashtaje, humba kiri no hashtaje, hey. Then it goes on from there. There's words that we sing in these songs. And I wake up, I hear those songs, and I kind of think, that's pretty good. It's kind of pretty and kind of relevant, too. I kind of like to learn those songs, too. My grandparents tell me that this is the way it's supposed to be. You wake up. Before you do anything else, you give thanks. Give thanks that we're alive here today. Give thanks for this life. Give thanks for that sun coming up one more time. Then he said, and then they start the day. The day begins as to what they do in that home. And kind of different, very different, I think. As we progress along in history today, because we find those kinds of things missing in many of our homes today. Was where it was a way of life. In the present day times, you know, I work in the schools, public schools, and with the problems that we face, the distorted history, many distortions, we're usually the victims. We're usually the villains, the bad guys, you see a book and we got a, you know, wild look on our face, and we're ready to jump on it, you know, anything that comes by, or throw a rock at it or something. It's usually how we're depicted through history. And it's still with us. Anytime you use, literally anytime you turn on a television, John Wayne or Lone Ranger or whatever, you know, it's same thing again. You know, they're screaming and hollering, and they're coming down the hillsides, you know, ready to just devour anything. I have found through my research, such things as scalping came from Europe. The European custom was brought here. We never knew what it was. It comes from the English. The French learned it quickly from the English. But actually, it came from the Swedish people way back in the times of when the Huns, the people that they had conflicts with, they started that custom a long time, 1,000 years ago, eventually brought it to these shores. When they introduced it to us, of course, when they would scalp one of our people, our children or our mothers, that kind of didn't set with us just right. So naturally, we would do it back. But what part of it do you read in the books? You know? You read about where we did it. And I think that's part of this whole thing, too, that I see. The exact opposite, the exact kind of way of life. One in a system where the human life is considered sacred. Very important, this human life. And also the family concept. Very important, you know, that was, there's nothing goes beyond this here. It's very strong, supposed to be. Very seldom have I seen that concept taught or in any books. It's getting better, but still nowhere near what it should be, I don't think. At least in some of the newer textbooks that I work with now, we're no longer the villains, and we're no longer sitting like this, you know. But still, it hasn't improved to that point. There's four areas that I usually like to cover, and I think I will this morning, that I feel people should know about us very strongly. There are others, too, but I usually refer to four because in our way of life, four is considered very important. We believe in the four directions, north, east, south, west. Anytime our ceremonies, we do something, we honor these four directions. We say there's a when the Creator made this world, made this earth, he seemed like he did everything in fours. And he must have had a reason for that. So all of these good things, so like in our pipe ceremonies, we honor these four directions. And honor him up there, then we touch it down here, honor the mother. Say our father's up there, our mother's down here. My grandfather said a long time ago, he said, grandson, he said, you'll never be an orphan, he said. He said, anytime you got problems, he said, you pray, he says, your father's up there, you talk to him, you tell him your problems, your troubles, how you are, tell him about it. And he said, when he pities you, when he hears your prayer, when he pities you, he blesses you, he said, through your mother here. He said, your mother, our language, we say, hi uni hara, or hi uni hihi wira. They talk like that. And that's what they mean. This is our mother, my mother, they say. So your father's up there, your mother's here. These are your parents, he said. Then us, he said, we're children of these two here, he said. So you keep that in mind when you go through life. That's what I've seen, and this is why we do this four, you know, four, then up there, then down here. Down here, this earth, here's mother, fathers. Then we got these four directions. And I always say four, you know, there's four seasons, spring, summer, fall, winter. We do that. There's four ages of man. You know, you're a little baby, you become a child, as you go through the adolescent years, then you're adult, and then finally you go into older age. You know, four things. You always do four things, four ways. So I thought about it, and I found there are four areas. They're all very closely related, but I think people should think about these. Many times in schools today, when people study Indians or Indian culture or develop units, they usually talk about bows and arrows or canoes or snowshoes or, you know, things that we used to make. Which is all right, I think, in itself. That's all right. I'm not saying that's bad or wrong or don't do that. But usually that's kind of where it ends up. They say, well, let's develop an Indian curriculum unit or an Indian history unit. And they'll draw pictures of a canoe or a snowshoe or something and say Indians made those and they thought of those or they invented those things. And that's really good, you know. But to me, those are kind of, shall I say, kind of on the surface. It's not deep enough. It's good to, I think those are like what I call Boy Scout things. You know, It's good to talk about them. It's good to teach children that Indians must have some good minds to think of how to make these and make them go, you know. But I think aside from that, there's some very deep issues here that we're talking about as far as our culture, our history, tell people about. And in a course like this, a session like this, I think it's very good to bring it out. The four I go to is these four. I've already mentioned one. I won't go too much further on, but it is very, very heavy and very, very important in this system today that we should talk about it and really make it a priority. And that is this respect for Mother Earth, this Hiunihara concept that I'm talking about. That's for all people. All people. We've been saying that a long time. And I can't say it enough, can't emphasize it enough, because we're talking about life itself. We're talking about survival of your people, your children, your grandchildren. That's what we're talking about. Because if you blow us this whole place up, we're going to go with it too. That's what we're saying. But that concept. Today, I hear about this term ecology. And I feel ecology is all right in itself, but it's not deep enough. It's not meaningful enough. Because ecology usually means, you know, whenever we can get to it, or those of us that feel like it, or kind of a if and when and so forth. There's so many different kinds of circumstances where it might not happen. It's not a priority. It's like my saying, okay, we have this many people here right now, and I might say tomorrow at the same time, those of us that can make it will all come back here to this campus in front of the chapel, and we'll go down the street here and we'll try to, maybe there's some trash or litter out on the campus. We're going to try to pick that all up tomorrow, okay, because we're interested in ecology. But what's wrong with that statement? I'm saying those of us that could make it, or those of us that feel like it, so forth. That's a really strong concern I have. It's just a kind of an if and maybe kind of situation. And the system I'm talking about, it wasn't if, it wasn't maybe, that was the way it was. You will do this. It was strongly ingrained in the people. And that we don't have today. That strong commitment. Look at, we can look up north at reserve mining. Look what they're doing. Look what they're putting in the water up there. And yet a man comes up and he tries to stop, tries to help. And he's removed from the case. Apparently there's not enough priorities. That's what we're talking about, those kinds of things, those kinds of issues that we're talking about. It's not a priority thing. It's kind of if, it's one day out of this year, let's set aside a day, or 1 week out of this year, let's set up Ecology Week, and let's all go pick up trash, or let's not burn here or something for 1 week. Let's all do that. That's ecology. In the Indian way of life, it wasn't 1 week or when you feel like it. It's all the time. No, there's number one priority. Number two that I talk about, incidentally, when I say this, back to number one, when we look at today's society, I think that's what our main concerns are. A man by the name of Seattle, he said many things, but in one statement he made, they asked him to sign a treaty for his people. And I always remember back to those words he said. There's one phrase he meant, I don't think I ever forget. He said, man does not own the earth, but earth owns the man. Man does not own the earth, but earth owns the man. What does that mean? You cannot own a tree any more than you can own the sun or this very air in this room. It's here for all of us to use. And we're all here for just a little while. And we're not going to be here indefinitely for 1,000 years. That's what he meant. We're all part of this together. It's my understanding of what he was emphasizing. And it's that thought, I think, that we really want to stress. There's just no length to the importance of it. Secondly, I go to the respect for age. Very important. It's number two. Strongly emphasized. There's just so many good things come from that. People with age, people that get older in years, 70, 80 years old. Boy, that's really good. You should do more things with them. My grandmother on my mother's side lived to be 80 years old. And that's where I could really see a personal experience. Be around with us. Tell us things. Teach us things. She could never talk English. She never went to school. That's what I'm saying, the exact opposite of what they did to my father. My grandmother, she never went there. Just talk her own language all the time. That's all she knew, Indian way of life. And that was where I could really see the need for this. In today's society, again, very important. A lot of things people can learn from that. They say a person gets older, better they are. You know, kind of more wrinkles, more gray hair. More of that you see, kind of more worthwhile listening to, saying that. In my tribe, when I go back to Wisconsin, I'm not very old. Not very old. So I kind of come in, my clan, we sit by the door, Bear Clan. That's what I do. I figure someday, you know, days coming, Creator allows it, I'll be that way. For now, I don't. Only time I go sometimes like this, they ask me to explain a little bit of our history, our culture, from what I have experienced. And I do that the best way I know how. But this is important. We really stress that. Has been. My grandmother would go on a tour, you might say. It was maybe about a good 100 homes she goes to, you know, on a tour. You know. All the grandchildren, nephews, nieces, daughters, sons, she goes on. And she stays there, you know, with us. We take turns. We kind of go after her. She can, till she finally makes the cycle, and she kind of starts out again with them. And that was very important when she was there. She couldn't do anything. Maybe she couldn't scrub floors or wash windows or do dishes or something, wash clothes. But that was important. It shows she was there. You know, we call upon her, and she tells us something. Grandfather, the same way, too. In today's society, it's bad to get old. Something wrong with you. You get wrinkles, you're supposed to wash them away or cover them up. If you get gray hair, you're supposed to rinse it out. Something wrong with that. We're going to put you someplace. I say that. That's important, I think, because I go to schools today, and many times the experience of a grandparents are, they're the ones I go visit at Thanksgiving. They're the ones we go visit at Christmas time, you know, for a day or two or a week. That's grandparents to a lot of people today. That's why I'm saying, well, I wish the experiences I had. You know. My grandmother's Indian name was Wipoma Karenga. That was her Indian name. That means Rainbow Woman. She comes from the Thunder Clan. As a young boy growing up, she'd tell us that, you know, we see a rainbow. She'd say, Goja Wipoma Karenga, Jene Waonakshin, she'd say. That rainbow you see over there, that's me, that's my Indian name. So we'd always thought, gee, Graham, that's a pretty name, you know. She's very proud of that name. Well, I grew up like that, knowing those kinds of things. 1968, she was 80 years old. She passed away, 80 years old. I was driving down the road. I felt pretty bad because it was a big loss for me. I felt very bad over it. I was driving down the road over here by the Minnesota-Wisconsin border, over by south of Red Wing near Lake Pepin, in that area, Pano High Bluffs. Driving there one day, I was feeling this way. I felt bad. Not so much for my grandmother, but you might say for myself. Hey, who's going to do this, these things? Big loss. I know she used to pray for me a lot of times. I know that too. And I was going down the road. It was kind of raining, drizzling, which didn't really help either. And I got on those high bluffs, and here, pretty soon the rain stopped, and the clouds, they kind of broke open, and it kind of cleared up. And I looked out over in the east towards the Wisconsin side, the river, and here right across the horizon, like there along the bluffs, real big rainbow, big bright one, you know, really see it. And it was just very obvious. Stone and I saw that, and I thought back, you know, what is that she used to say, you know, very small. That rainbow that you see over there, that's me, she'd say, you know, that's my Indian name. And I remembered that, kind of reflected back, gee, that's my grandmother. Thought, so I pulled over, you know, pulled my car over to the side of the road, stopped. And I made a prayer, got off the car, face over there towards the east. Made a prayer. I give thanks. You know, I give thanks for this day. I give thanks for having such a nice grandmother. And I give thanks that I'm Indian, that I'm Native American, that I'm Winnebago. Because it's through those things that I learn these things, and it really helps me, comforts me, gives me some kind of inner strength, spiritual help. Because through this thing, I was feeling bad. Now I see, there's my grandmother. I can just see her. There she is, what she used to say. That's really nice. It's really nice. So now whenever I see one, I know what it means. I know the significance behind that. It's really nice. I wonder if everybody else is kind of has those things too, kind of thing. I'm really lucky, really fortunate. So I don't have to feel bad anymore. I don't have to feel lonely anymore. These are very good things that help me today. It's because I have that relationship. Those are the things that I think we're talking about today. We want people to understand, perhaps in many cases encourage, or wherever capacities, you know, that each one of you have, you know, you all, it's going to affect you in different ways. But that's what I see. That's my interpretation of Indian culture, how it has been, what it is. Very deep. Now, somebody even today might make fun of our Indian names, you know. Oh, they're doing this, you're this kind of a buffalo, or that kind of a bear, or that kind of a rain, or something. Make fun of our names, even, without really knowing what they're saying, what they're doing. That's what I see. That's why I bring that up. My grandfather, his Indian name was Wakanjaguga, the Thunder Clan. That means the thunder that's coming this way. That's what it means. We have the same feeling like that. You know, sometimes it rains, you hear that thunder outside, you know, kyoom, kyoom, you know. The windows kind of rattle too. We have, a lot of the little kids, you know, they kind of head for under the bed. They kind of get scared, you know. We always tell them, hey, don't, you know, you don't have to be scared. That's our grandfather. He sounds like he's kind of mad, though, in a way, because these windows kind of, we kind of joke about it. But it makes us feel good, you know, that he's back with us. You know, we kind of, it's a kind of nice thing, nice experience, we say. Those kinds of things we see, you know, we feel. And that's how I've been progressing through. Okay, that's the second one. Third one that I've experienced, and I still see today. And it's a hard one to understand, and probably a hard one to adjust to. But it's something we call sharing, generosity. Very strong, family concept again. 1954, this father that I was talking about that went to that school passed away. And when we had his funeral, there was about 300-400 cars come to his funeral. Whole tribe almost come. And they all tell me how they're related to me. Henry, you're my nephew. Henry, you're my grandson. Or Henry, you're my brother. Or Henry, you're my uncle. And this, and they kind of tell me who they are. And what that. And they give me something too. Maybe they give me a gift of some kind. Or something to wear. Or some food. Or something, anything. They invite me to their homes. Hey, come over here. I'm going to kind of give you this. Or I'll talk to you. Try to encourage me. They do that. Since that time, I've really seen it. So a lot of times I tell people, you know, like today, you know, I could have brought enough, I could have filled up this whole section right here. I could have brought some of them with me to you. A lot of times people see a lot of Indians, they might get scared too, you know. So I just kind of go around by myself. But this is why, you know, I really strongly stress that. We've been stressing that a long time. Today we're having hard times. Today's society, many of our people do live in poverty. They don't have too many things to share. But whatever they have to share, they're even willing to share that. A man by the name of Mark Lane, who's an attorney, was involved with Wounded Knee, I think stated this very clearly one time. I heard him talk. He said he went out to Pine Ridge. He didn't know anything about Indians. You know, he went to these white schools where we were supposed to be savages and so forth. He was kind of apprehensive, went out there. But he said when he went out there, he said that's what he was met with. He kind of thought maybe these people might hate him or might try to do him in. He didn't really know kind of what to expect. But yeah, when he got out there, these people, he said they made him welcome to the best they had. They give up their bedrooms, they give him their best bed and whatever they got, they put that on there for him. Give them food to eat. He said, every time I go to an Indian home, they give me something to eat. I want to do that with me. He said, that's what I encountered. He said, I went out there. And that's good, and that's what I'm saying. It's really important. Many of these things, I realize, have been told many different churches, including the Lutheran Church, Catholic Church, Baptist, Episcopal, all the many different denominations. In the Bible, it says that. Somebody comes knock on your door, you're supposed to help them. If it's a hungry brother, you're supposed to feed him. It says that in that Bible. And I know that. I went to those schools too. They told me to read the Bible, so I read the Bible. I know what it says in there. Not all of it, but some good things in there. And strangely enough, it really coincides with what we've been saying all this time, long before Columbus ever landed here. We're saying those things, doing those things. When a man went out and got a deer, when he brought it back to the village, they skin it out, they dress it, and they cook it all up, soup, make big kettles. And they feed the people. They say, go get the orphans, go get the widows, go get the older people. Bring them, we're going to eat here. This is for all of us. That was the concept they had. When somebody died in the homes, in the lodges, they put the fires out. They let them go out. And they go over there and they put their hand in that ashes, the coals. And when they have them coal ashes, they get them, they mark their face like that four times. And they're in mourn. They cry for 4 days. Do that. Again, that number four. 4 days, 4 nights. They feel bad over losing this mother, or grandmother, or son, or whatever. And then after the 4 days is up, the clan leader or the religious leader comes. He says a prayer for this lodge, for those people that live there. They have the funeral. They put away the remains of this loved one. Then he comes back and he rekindles, though, this elder, he comes, he rekindles those fires, lights them up again. These people wash these coals off their ashes, wash the face off, change clothes, comb their hair. And they start off again, where they left off before this 4 days here. That 4 days, they start again. They say, if you're that well adjusted in your life, you couldn't do that. You had good feelings for this person. If you had pity for that person, God honored them, didn't do bad things to them, didn't have evil thoughts for them. When they die, you can live that way. It won't affect you. You'll have feelings of maybe loneliness, but you don't have to have bad feelings, regrets, they say. So strongly in the Indian way of life, strongly stressed, you have good thoughts for people, good feelings for people. Don't hate them. Pity them instead. Pray for them. That's the way it's supposed to be. That way when that person dies, you don't have to say, oh my goodness, or oh my gosh, to say. That's what they did, those lodges. 4 days. Then they start up again. That was the way of life, long time. As I progressed through my own life, I think back, you know, I wish I was living in those lodges, the way they did things. The other thing, I guess, is in that area, is, you know, many times people mistake, going back to the first one, what we're talking about, you know. We don't have tree gods and sky gods and grass gods and water gods over. But we strongly believe that the maker, a lot of power, creator, in our language we say Mauna, when he made those things, the spiritualism, the force, the power that he has, he instilled in every one of those things. So he lives in every one of those things. That's the feeling. So if you respect him, you can respect those things too. That's the way, that's what we're talking about. That's been misunderstood many times. They say, oh, Indians got a lot of gods, they got a god for this and god for that and god for this and god, they got 100 gods. It's not so. But there's power, spiritualism, that's in those things. And that's what you got to understand. There's only one creator. There's only one supreme power. But he made all these things. That's why in our churches, we can call them that, like this here, we put all those things in there. We use the deer hide. We use the wood drums. We use the plant life, like sage. We use the fur pelts from the otter, the beaver. These things, he made all those things. He made the fire. The fire represents creator. Put it in the center of the house, the wood. Made also from the trees. All these things we put on the rocks. Everything in all these different ceremonies we do. There are many different kinds of ceremonies. But they're all from this earth because we know that he made those things too. That's what we're talking about. The last area I go to is what George Catlin said. And I think this is probably pretty important too. We're going to regain many of these things that we've lost. But when he came back from going out west, he came back. He said, these people, he said, and he lived amongst about 50 different tribes. His name is George Catlin, C-A-T-L-I-N. He was a lawyer, painter, artist. When he came back, he said, these people have no jails. He said, these people have no prisons. He said, these people have no locks. And he said, these people have no keys. Four things. He said many other things too, but think about those four. What does that mean? No prisons, no jails, no locks, no keys. There was a mutual understanding, a system that was developed that told the people, that taught the children that you must have respect, you must be honest, and we must have trust. We must have that if we're going to exist. They taught that to their children. They grow up, you know, same way again in the Bible it talks about children. You teach your children right, teach them the right way to go. When they grow up, they're going to grow up that way. It says that in the Bible. These Indian people, they knew that. When they're 1 year old, 2 year old, you got to teach them good things. So when they grow up, they'll do good things. We knew that too. Consequently, in our homes, we don't have to have locks and keys. You'll never see a wigwam or teepee with a big padlock, front door. Never see that. Because this was taught. And it was developed and it was maintained. But in the later years now, of course, today, many of our reservations were not that way. But those are the four areas that go to. Now, as we progress through today, we're going to head for tomorrow, next day. We're clinging to this. I'm clinging to these things myself because I know they're good. Very good. Comforting, strengthening. Wherever I go, wherever I teach, I go out into schools. They want to know, what is this? Who are these Indians? What do they do? What do they believe in? A lot of good things. There are a lot of power there you can learn from. Aside from, like I say, the canoes and the toboggans and wigwams and the snowshoes and so forth. You can study those too. That's all right. A lot of the food that you eat came from us. Potatoes, squash, corn, all kinds of nice food that we're using here when Columbus got off those boats. A lot of the medicine that you use today when you get sick came from us. A lot of the roads that you travel came from us. And of course, first and foremost, the very land that you're sitting on right now was once ours. We can go to all those things, but aside from that, these very important areas, we go on to interpersonal relationships that were instilled in the families, uncles to nephews, grandfathers to grandchildren, uncles to nephews, uncles to nieces, very strong, in-laws. You got a mother-in-law, you got to have respect, you have a father-in-law, same way. And as I experienced that, as I've gone through now, I see where, geez, somebody, whoever thought of that? Had to be a pretty deep psychologist. He had to have been in practice 30, 40 years, so it must have occurred to him, if we do it this way, it's going to work out all right. Then he practiced it here and found out it worked. These are the things I see today. We're clinging to those. Many times we're told, you know, Indian way of life is gone. And it's true, you know, the buffalo's gone, teepee's gone. A lot of things that we used to do are gone, you know. And we're losing a lot of them. Canoe making, totem pole building, whatever it is, you know. We're losing a lot of them. Some of them we're clinging to. We're still doing it, practice them, learn how, teach our children, you know. But these other things here, these are the really important things in this life, this society. Today this is a bicentennial, 200 years they say. I've been telling people we've been having a lot of bicentennials, our people, you know. This isn't the first one. Been here a long time. But maybe through this bicentennial, maybe a person can reflect back over this last 200 years. What have we done? What have we done wrong? And where can we change for the better, you know? That's what I see. And that is why I am here. It isn't to celebrate bicentennial. In fact, I've been telling people, my input with the bicentennial is in April, I understand there's a wagon train coming through the Twin Cities. And what I plan to do is I plan to attack that wagon train in April, you know. Because that's what we're supposed to do, you know. History books have been telling us that perpetuating that. That's what we usually do, you know. So I was kind of thinking of doing that. That's kind of what I see. But I think we can learn some very positive things from this. All of you here, you can carry with you, take those and say, well, this is kind of where we're headed for. We're a very small number, this country, in this state, wherever we go, you know. But there's some very important things that we have experienced that we're looking to use on ourselves. And then, like we say, whenever possible, maybe you take some of that with you. Use it on yourself in whichever way you can. I think that's really the key to all of this. I think I'm out of time. I just heard a bell. Sometimes that's usually, you know, the key. But I really want to thank all of you for coming here. I realize that all of you don't have to be here, but you have some interest into what this means and what we've been saying. And that's kind of what I've patterned my remarks here today. So I really want to thank all of you for your kind attention and making it sound like somebody's up here. Thank you very much.
Mr. Greencrow talked about sharing. We thank you for the sharing that you've done with us today on Native American values, values which certainly can and should be important to all of us. This convocation is dismissed.